What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Fredita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, or YouTube, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate your support. Couldn't do the show without our sponsors. My Patriot Supply has been nice enough to create our own website for us, preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Just go take a look there, see if there's anything you like. And man, if 2020 wasn't a wake-up call that you better get your house in order, I don't know what is. Get yourself prepared. Get yourself prepared with food, get yourself prepared with supplies, get yourself prepared mentally, emotionally, get yourself prepared for what is coming down. Take advantage of this downtime. Go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Support the show, support our sponsors as well. Well, I'll tell you what, a couple of weeks ago, I was on the Union of the Unwanted show. We did a great episode on Bitcoin and crypto in general. And one of the people that we had on was somebody that I'm into. It's been a while now. I've been enjoying his work. He is the author of The Unbreakable Rules of Masculinity, as well as Dominate Twitter. He's also the host of two different podcasts, Sharp Conversations with Hotep Jesus, as well as Hotep's Been Told You. That is my man, Hotep Jesus. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to talk about all the tech. You're a tech entrepreneur. You're into everything. You're not into everything. You're into the right things. You're into the interesting things. You're into crypto. You're into artificial intelligence. I mean, if we had to map out where this world is going, some of the components that are going to be extremely important in the next 20, 30, 50 years, I can't think of two that are going to lead the way more than artificial intelligence and cryptocurrency. How'd you get involved in this?
Well, I've been a tech geek my whole life.
Yeah.
I was in CPG, consumer packaged goods, and it's just too slow. You know, you got to go from designing the package, then getting samples of the package, then the formula, then having them ship that. I mean, shipping alone was a hurdle in itself. Mm-hmm. And then storage was the next big problem with CBG. So you got shipping and you got storage. So it just made the whole thing slow. So from beginning of the product to the end product, and then reiterating on said product. And so I had my own agency, and I was consulting with a lot of different like celebrities and investors. And it was all basically in CBG. You know, you find a niche, you kind of just stick in it and just, you know, help those people out in that niche. And one of them was wine and spirits. And So one day I was just sitting down talking to the guy who I knew had a lot of money. And I said, why don't you get into mobile app space? It's going to explode in the next 10 years. He's like, no. You know, people kind of stick to what they know. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, so I just started asking more and more people, hey, you know, and I'd hit him with app ideas. Hey, you know, you should try this with an app. And nobody really got it. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to leave CPG and just start talking to people who do get it. So that's when I moved towards the mobile app space. And then I spent about a decade or more in the mobile app space, learning about like app store optimization and digital marketing and software and product and, you know, how to make a better product fast. Right. Because with software, it's all about speed and how to make these processes easier to manage. So I wasn't a dev, but I knew how to make processes faster. I knew how to prioritize. Mm-hmm. So that was my foray into the tech world. So I always tell this story when I talk about how I got into Bitcoin, because it's so important in my life. I came from a traditional marketing background and a little bit of digital, but I wasn't a digital marketer like I am today. Whereas I was doing SEO, but didn't know I was doing SEO. So I didn't understand the language and all that type stuff. And I went for a job interview at a mobile app company and I didn't get it. Now, and previously in my life, I just wasn't used to not getting jobs. I interview very well. I'm smart. I was just used to getting jobs. So I was like, what the hell? Like, how did I not get that job? But I knew it was because when the guy was talking to me, I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. I was saying all these different terms. I had no idea what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. So I spent like the next year just studying everything he said in that interview and more. And I became an expert on digital marketing and funnels and drip campaigns and advertising and Facebook ads and Google ads and ad roll and retargeting and all these different types of things. Right. So landing page optimization, you name it. So I did that for like the next 5 years. And then Bitcoin became popular. I think 2017 Bitcoin had its big boom that year. And I got in early in that year of 2017. I got into Bitcoin. And so I understood Bitcoin. I understood the market. I understood the personality, so on and so forth. And then I was on LinkedIn one day. And the same guy who turned me down from that mobile app company now had a Bitcoin company. So I reached out to him. I said, hey, you know, I'd love to talk to you about your Bitcoin company. So this time we sit down and we talk and I sound like a guru, right? Like I understand marketing, digital marketing, because I had a traditional marketing background, experiential marketing background, field marketing background. But now I have digital and I know the Bitcoin world. So we got to talk. And after like several conversations, he was like, yo, you're our guy.
Right.
But I had worked for so many different tech companies that I wasn't the type of person that was looking for salary. I was looking for equity. My mind changed from fiat to equity because I was dealing with so much bullshit at these different companies. For example, I'll give you two stories. I was working for these young girls whose father was bankrolling their mobile app, and they had an office in Rockefeller Center in New York City. Now, you know what the real estate goes up in there for.
Yeah.
And they had a nice, huge office. So their dad gave him a piece of his office. So we got prime real estate, you know, Broadway's right down the street. You know, everything's right there. Make a long story short, I didn't have a budget. They didn't give me a budget or anything like that to do my marketing. I had to work organic. But my thing is organic. Mm-hmm. I make a tweet go viral. I optimize the Twitter account for downloads. I make the tweet go viral. We got something like, I think it was 747 downloads or something like that overnight. I come into work the next day, smile on my face, knowing I just killed it. It's the most downloads they've ever had.
Right.
They wouldn't even do that in a week. They said, Brian, what happened? I said, oh, this tweet went viral. So I showed them the tweet and it's like, you know, thousands of retweets on this tweet. Keep in mind, I wrote the book on Twitter, Dominate Twitter.
You literally wrote the book on how to dominate Twitter.
Right, exactly. But not at this point. I hadn't written it yet. That was to come later. And they said, no, that couldn't be it. I said, what? He said, no, can you track down where these downloads came from? I'm like, yo, it came from this tweet. Yeah. I got it optimized. No, it couldn't be that. I'm like, you don't see the correlation between the time that this tweet goes viral and the time we get these downloads?
Right.
It couldn't be it. I said, oh, wow. All right, so that contract ended. I got the hell up out of there. I put somebody else in my position. I got commission for him getting in a new position. I said, I'm not dealing with this. You deal with this.
I'm going to get paid to leave.
Yeah, exactly. So I got paid to leave. Exactly. You know, like I'm no fool. Then the second time it happened, I've had other little like interactions with founders that I just wasn't happy with. They weren't listening and understand. But this one story, I was working for a gaming company, again, mobile app. And when I first got there, I said, oh, I see the problem. Your Facebook pixels aren't firing on the purchase conversions. You should probably fix that before we start spending money. He wants to spend like $2,500 a day. Mm-hmm. He's like, just run the ads. I'm like, you sure? He's like, yeah, just run the ads. It's like, all right, your money. Run the ad, $2,500 a day. So about a month goes by and we're tracking the ROI of every marketing campaign in a spreadsheet. And every one of them is like -99, -98, -97. And no matter how creative I got, they were all in the red. I got one campaign down to -90%, just with like great copy and just, you know, really killing it, right? So boss comes to me, he says, how come everything's in negative? What are you doing wrong? And I said, well, the pixel conversions aren't firing, so we can't optimize for purchase conversions. Oh, that can't be it. No, it's definitely it, though. That's definitely it.
Right.
So he's like, all right, let's see what our dev says. So I told the dev, I said, implement this. The dev's like, oh, I don't have time to implement that. I'll put this in a new version. And I said, because apparently, like, when they upload the code, the site's going to be down for 24 hours, something honest, some BS.
Yeah.
So I said, when's the next version going to come out? He said, next month. I'm like, oh, my God, I got to wait a month to add one little pixel line of code. Month goes by. They're still on my neck. New version pumps out. Overnight, we did like 25,000, 50,000. I forget what the number was. App goes viral as far as dollars are concerned. I come to work the next day, smile on my face again. Mm-hmm. They said, Brian, what happened? I said, remember the pixel conversions I was telling y'all about? That was in the new version that just went out last night. So now the campaigns are optimized for the Facebook algorithm. No, that can't be it. I said, oh shit, this feels like deja vu. So like, I'm like, nah, that's definitely it. So I went back, wrote another email, said, hey, the boom last night is because of this, that, and the third. They told me that wasn't it.
Denial. I said,
yeah, I'm like, so now I'm starting to think in my head, are they doing this because they don't want to give me credit? Or are they doing this because they're just freaking ignorant? And I come to the conclusion that that's irrelevant. The fact of the matter is,
they're doing it.
They're doing it, right.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what? From now on, anytime I'm dealing with a corporation, there's two stipulations. One is I need to be on the board, and because I know that's where all the power is. And two is I need equity. So I got to say so. So you know you can't get rid of me. You got to get listened to me because the piece of your company's already gone. We're not doing 4 years vested. We're not doing none of that.
Right.
So that's what I do now. You know, I take equity in these companies, man. I learned my lesson.
Well, I'm a new customer of Coinbit app.
Are you?
Yes, I am. As a matter
of fact.
Nice. And for those that don't know what that is, it is a, think of it, you could probably explain it better, but you know, you can set up a service on your bank account where you round up and put that money in a savings account, round up for charity, round up, whatever. It's a concept that we're becoming aware of. And this, your program, your company takes same idea, round up to buy Bitcoin and buys it on a weekly basis. And it calculates how many, you know, what you're going to spend per week. And then at that end of the week, it buys Bitcoin and you can add additional features on it. You can do multipliers to it. You make it two times. So whatever it collects, let's say it collects, I don't know, $8 total. You can put a multiplier on it times two, times five, times 10, whatever you want. And what it does is it just takes a little bit of your money, barely even notice that it's missing, buys Bitcoin on a consistent basis in a way, in a dollar cost average sort of way. It allows you to, you know, take some of the emotion out of it. As we see now, we got Bitcoin going crazy. I wrote a book with Jeff Berwick, founder of Dollar Vigilante. Do you think I'm kicking myself for not buying when Jeff was telling me to buy 2 years ago? Yes, I am. But I'll tell you what, I'm not gonna make the mistake. I'm not going to be 2 years from now of saying, hey, well, then I knew it was coming up and I'm talking to Hotep Jesus and he's telling me, get your shit together and buy some Bitcoin. And I didn't do it. I don't want to have that conversation again. So I like this about your app because first of all, it's real easy to use. And like you said on Rogan, you know, it's about removing clicks in the scenario, man. If you can make it easy, if you can take one step out of the process and just make it so easy, You really give the customer nowhere to go. How did you get involved with CoinBit app? Because what I'm going to do also for people that are interested, I'm going to put a link in the description to it. You click on this link, full disclosure, I'll get $5 if you sign up for it. But once you sign up, you're going to get the ability to have that link and give it to your friends and get $5 on it too. But I want people to take a look at this. I'm not saying you have to sign
up. $5 worth of Bitcoin.
$5 worth of Bitcoin. Yeah. I should clarify that. Thank you. I want people to at least examine it. I'm not saying you have to sign up. You don't have to do it. Just go take a look. See if it's a fit for you. I started looking at it after you were on our union show. I started taking a look at it. And I said, well, this seems like something I need to do. And it took me about 30 minutes to get it all set up. All the KYC components that you got to do, that's not you. That's the system.
That's the banking system. Yeah.
Right.
That's the government. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's the government. And we're no fans of that, but we'll play the game. We'll play the government game early on so that we can get ourselves crypto so that we don't have to play the government game ever again.
Right.
So how'd you get into CoinBit app? I mean, I think I have an idea, but
So like I said, you know, I got dejected from that job offer, and then we circled back on LinkedIn. I spoke to Maher, who's the CEO and founder of CoinBits. We had those conversations, and then we locked in an agreement. And then I joined the team. We've actually simplified it more now. So, like, I don't use the roundups. I just set a weekly amount, and it just buys a weekly amount. You know, so $10, $50, $100, whatever it is, you can just set that weekly amount and it'll buy that automatically. It's basically up on the dollar cost averaging. The thing is, you know, even said, there's an article somewhere, a study they did and said, if you bought the Bitcoin dips, dollar cost averaging still made more money because you ended up purchasing more often. Waiting for the dips means you didn't purchase as often. But the dollar cost averaging, because you're purchasing on a weekly basis, you got a better average price. So, you know, that was my problem, like, with investing is, it, you know, you might just forget, like, oh man, I was supposed to transfer, you know, $4,000 into my account this month to invest in, you know, to dollar cost average on whatever securities I own, I'm invested in. And also, it's the set it and forget it model. Like, I can't remember the last time I logged into my CoinBits app account, but I'm sure it's like a ton of money just sitting in there. But I don't plan on selling Bitcoin for another 10, 20 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And at that point, it's just really, I'm gonna have to pay some capital gains tax on it probably. And but I'll be transferring it into some sort of capital goods at that point. Yeah, I'm not transferring it to USD. I'm going to, you know, I'll have a plan to move that money to another vehicle of some sort.
Yeah. Well, fiat's dead. We know it. It's coming. Yeah. It's a slow death. It seems like people are waking up to it. We've had this paradigm shift recently where you start to hear companies talking about Bitcoin. You have Michael Saylor talking about, you know, massive purchases. You have Elon Musk allocating part of Tesla's cash reserves into Bitcoin. And then they start talking about, well, what if the S&P 500 companies were to take 1% of their cash holdings and put it into Bitcoin? What would that do to the price? And it shows these massive spikes. Now, I'm not Nostradamus. I don't know what the future holds, but I'll tell you what. It doesn't matter what I think about or what anyone thinks about the future of the United States dollar. It is being whittled away, inflated away it is just a math equation. At some point, it becomes worthless. So do you want to transfer worthless? I mean, do you want to take these fiat pieces of paper now and transfer them into something that has a little bit more of a scarcity component to it? It seems like it would be the right thing to do. How do you explain, like, to people that are new to Bitcoin, to my mom or someone, how do you explain it in a way that sort of makes sense to somebody that has spent a lifetime trapped in the fiat currency paradigm, like we all have, and how do you get them to understand how something digital like this can actually retain its value?
I think we have to first assess this person's investor savvy. Some people don't understand what money is. So before I explain Bitcoin to somebody, I might have to explain money to them.
Yeah, probably.
Right? Like, I have to explain to them what fiat is, fractional reserve, banking, how their labor is being stolen. Like, that's the conversation we have to have first. And I got to let that digest for like a week or something like that. Come back, reiterate. Like, I got, it takes you, it could take you a month just to teach somebody just the dollar.
Yeah.
Now, somebody who invests and understands that they shouldn't hold on to the dollar, it's just as simple as telling them that there's only going to be 21 million Bitcoin in circulation ever. And it's like, oh, okay, it's the rarity of the thing that makes it great. And it's backed by the proof of work. Proof of work is backed by energy. Energy is backed by Earth. So Bitcoin is backed by Earth.
Yeah. It requires a lot of energy to mine Bitcoins in a digital way on the servers that are mining Bitcoins. And therefore, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of you can see the hit pieces coming out now. Bitcoin is going to boil the oceans with all the energy use and everything. That's how you can tell you're on the right track, is when the mainstream media starts pissing all over it and starts making up ridiculous things like you're using too much energy. Oh, shit. Yeah. Let's not talk about the United States military using all the energy. Are we going to have that conversation? No, never, never. Never on your nightly news that. But Bitcoin is going to kill everybody, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people don't even understand energy. Like, for example, like nuclear energy. I had a gentleman, Schneider, on my channel. He talked about nuclear energy and it educated me about a lot of things on nuclear energy. And he said one of the things about nuclear power plant is people always say, oh, they're operating at full capacity. And he's like, that's how nuclear energy works. You need it. They operate better at full capacity or near full capacity. When it's not at full capacity is when you should worry.
Good to know.
Yeah. So, that's one of the things I think people need to understand is nuclear energy. And then even when he talks about, what was that? The fallout in Russia or
Chernobyl?
Chernobyl. Yeah. So I asked him about like Chernobyl and he's like, do you realize that, there's more radioactivity in like your average apple than Chernobyl right now? And he's just like running me through all these like different facts. And I'm like, he's like, do you realize like the radiation isn't even actually that bad? It's just like all these different facts. So when you get educated on these things, and then like when we had the summit with you guys, they were talking about how you can power Bitcoin off of like, what do they say, like a radio frequency or something like that, satellite or something. Yeah. But solar power or something, like, I forget what it was, but and I meant to go back and listen to that part and investigate, but it's just a lot of things that people were miseducated on and need to be re-educated on before they start to understand things. But older folks, I really don't try to educate them on why they should invest in Bitcoin. Only thing I say is, what are you going to wait until it's the price of a Bentley to get in?
Yeah.
Right. Like I'll just FOMO them.
Well, that's what I've got right now for sure. Full blown FOMO.
Yeah.
Because I'm mad at myself. Because it's not like I just found out about Bitcoin. It's like I was speaking at an Acapulco the last 2 years, man. I got up on stage and followed all the crypto vigilante guys, man. I know those. I knew better. I knew better and I didn't do it. But like I said, you know, like, do I want to make two mistakes or just one? You know, so I see this. And what's interesting is that this, so you get into the cryptocurrencies, you start to understand how they work. You sit to, you compare them against the US dollar and you say, okay, well, I can see where this is going. This is definitely the future of currency. But then you start to see artificial intelligence. And you see the breakthroughs that are being made there. And yeah, it gets a little, I think a lot of people would admit that with artificial intelligence, I mean, there's a fine line between like helping humanity and enslaving humanity with it. And what you guys are doing, I think, is really interesting with Wazo AI, which is you brought in this security system, like facial recognition component to this for businesses. Tell me a little bit more about how that works.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up. I actually have a meeting with them today. So there's, we actually, let me pull this. So we actually refined it recently, and the client is asking for people counting, heat mapping, customer dwell time, sales staff monitoring. Those are like the main key, there's some pain points behind them. Those are the main key features that they're looking at. And, you know, like people counting, there's like sub features to people counting. For example, I can count the total amount of people in the year, in the day, in the minute, in the hour, mm-hmm. you know, average per hour. And so there's all these like mini metrics just behind some of these things, some of these features like people counting. There's heat mapping, understanding heat mapping and also path tracking. So understanding how people enter your store and where they go. So if you know everybody comes in and they make a left, well, maybe you need to put your most expensive products to the left, or maybe there's something on the left that's drawing them that way, right? So you start thinking and say, well, I can actually start to look at this and create my floor to put them on a path to walk around this store in such a way that makes... gives me higher profitability. And then there's like customer dwell time. And that will tell you like, how long does each person stand in each section, mm-hmm. right? And then building out profiles for each person. And then there's sales staff monitoring. So we'll be able to say, hey, this person has greeted a customer or has not. This person has greeted 10 customers. This person has an average of, you know, 3 customers greeted per shift. And then you can just say, all right, I'm going to fire my bottom 3%. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I'll promote my top 3%. And you just get to just start making better decisions about your floor plan and your sales staff based upon real live numbers, as opposed to trying to guess and, you know, catch them on their phone. You know, like we can even do probably, you know, detection, say, hey, your sales staff, spends this much time on their cell phone per shift.
Right.
So recognizing that device, so on and so forth. But yeah, that's how we're looking at optimizing the retail space with Wazo AI.
Oh man, this has got to be right up your alley too, because you come from SEO and you're doing the digital version of this. You're figuring out where people are, figuring out, you know, how to get them from A to B, how to move them from one place to get them through your funnel and whatnot. This is a real life version of your funnel, right?
Yeah, this is analytics for real life.
Yeah. There is a dark component to this, but there's the potential for it.
There's a lot of dark components to this.
Where this can be, you know, you're talking about heat mapping and this and that. And I was coming through Shanghai once in 2005, right when the bird flu was going on. And I was going through the airport and I had been there for, I don't know, 5 days or so. And I didn't feel good. I had a legit like fever and I wasn't good. And they're funneling us in this airport through this terminal area. And they've got these like satellite, they look like glowing heaters on the sides. And I'm going, what is this shit? And as we get closer, I realize that they're scanning everybody for temperature. They're like literally taking people's temperature. And I'm thinking, Total Recall. I'm going, oh shit, they're going to, you know, I mean, I'm going to get caught here. They're going to map my head. I'm going to be too hot. They're going to put me in a chicken coop for 3 weeks until I'm quarantined. I was freaking out. I got through fine and everything was fine, but it reminded me that like that technology is exists in some places and has existed in some places for a long, long time. And we're just starting to get it. And what the Chinese have done with facial recognition cameras and artificial intelligence tied into a social credit system has me terrified. And I wonder, man, the you guys have to have these conversations, I would assume, at work about where the line is between improving the product to a place where it works great for your customers and crossing that line into a form of like surveillance.
That's definitely a huge concern. And one of the motivations why I wanted to get into this space, because I want to understand how the system works, because one day I might need to fool the system.
Yeah, for sure. Right? I'm kind of counting on you to make it so that we don't get, you know, it's not used for bad, for evil purposes.
I mean, the police are already using this. You know, we have a case where police have installed cameras on light posts and busted drug dealers because they said, 200 people have entered and exited this house. So and it's drawing like path, it's doing like path tracking. Yeah. It's like, these are 200 unique individuals over the course of one day. That's a drug house, you know?
That's
so
too many people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they're ordering a lot on Amazon.
Right. You know? So, yeah. So, I mean, it's something that's already been implemented at the law enforcement level. I wasn't too keen on using this at the law enforcement level. I mean, obviously there's that bait, right? Where you can get some really good government contracts licensing this software out.
Oh yeah.
So there's always that lure of the money. And thankfully we haven't taken that bait, and we've catered this towards the retail space. And there's some things we can do as far as security. Facial recognition, gait recognition, mood recognition, weapon detection, animal detection, license plate detection. Like, there's a whole lot of different capabilities of our software to where it has Big Brother. I'm not going to deny that I'm not building, Big Brother technology. We are. This is Big Brother technology. But the thing is, it's going to exist, and we need righteous people behind that technology. And we can't allow other people to have a monopoly on that technology. But like I said, we're mostly focused on the retail space and keeping individuals safe from bank robbers, lowering shrinkage. So if somebody comes in and they're shoplifting, we can run a profile on that and say, all right, this shoplifter has entered your building again. Here they are, right? Mm-hmm. So trying to do the righteous things with the software as opposed to some of the evil, nefarious things.
Yeah, and you guys can reconfigure people. You know, people don't have to get brand new cameras. They can just sort it out through their camera. So you take a retail store that has security cameras already, but what good are they if nobody's manning them, right?
Right. Exactly. And manning them, it just comes with so many flaws. Right. So, you know, the software will pick up and detect certain things and then make recordings of certain things. You can go back and play back. You know, you don't have to play back the whole tape. You can just play back certain instances. Because what good is looking at tape when there's nothing on the screen, right? So it'll just record instances where something is happening. And then you don't have to keep all that tape. You just keep the tape where something did happen.
Well, man, as I have a marketing degree, I would geek out with this stuff. You know what I mean? To be able to map the flow of where a customer goes, and you know, and you have 1,000 customers in your store over the course of a day. You see that 77% of them, when they walk in your store, hang off immediate right and go that way. Like you said, you don't want to see what are they looking at? What's going on over there? How they navigate through the store. Companies spend good money on this research. There's a lot of thought that goes into. You know, you go to your typical Walmart and you go, you know, and most people don't give it much thought as to the layout, as to the positioning of the items on the shelves, where they are, where the sunlight is above them, you know, all this stuff matters. And to crunch that, I'm all right with that. I'm all right with them taking all that, you know, customer behavior information to try and make a better mousetrap, or at least guide you through their store in the right way.
The other thing is selling the data.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll be collecting data and selling it too.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of data brokers who want to buy the data from what we collect at these retail locations. Nothing private you know, not like, oh, this is John Brown and he's 34 years. Not like that. More like, you know, here's how many people that enter this building in this city, you know, on an average basis, those higher level metrics.
Yeah.
So that's another business model that allows us to create some revenue.
I'm working in the real estate world. So, I mean, I could see retail landlords wanting to implement that, you know, to everybody wanting to know how many people are coming and going. Hey, I got more people coming in than I thought, so I'm jacking rents up, you know, things like that. All that stuff can happen. But you've got another company, Bloom AI Models.
Oh, you know about that one. Okay.
I do know about this one. And this is a fascinating one to me because you're fake people.
Yeah, we are.
You're doing the thing that a lot of us kind of joked about they're going to do at some point, and you're doing it. So you're making it's creating. You tell me. Tell me what it is.
Yeah, we make fake people. You said it, you know, but I joke around and I say we're trying to replace the Instagram influencer. You know, so let's say you have a clothing line and you need models for your clothing line. Mm-hmm. Well, you can put them on a model and we can completely change their face to meet every single demographic you need. So instead of saying, I need a Chinese person, I need an Indian person. No, you take one model and you have that one model put on that clothes and model it, and we can change their hair, their age, their gender, whatever it is, with a click of a button. And then you lower your cost for models.
Man.
We'll just use the body.
You're going to get casting directors are going to be mad at you. They're going to be out there with torches and pitchforks. You're taking away my livelihood.
We're actually changing the model for casting. Because now you're going to be casting for deepfakes, right? Because the deepfake is going to need a variety of faces and body types. So instead of you casting for the brands, you'll be casting directly to us.
Oh, yeah. You're going to say, we need give me some fatties for this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you're going to have an audition, a cattle call with all these, no pun intended, all these people, all these fat people showing up. And then you're going, I'll take that one and that one. And then we're going to 3D scan you. And then we're going to steal. And then you are going to wind up in a bunch of ads but with somebody else's face on it. And you're never going to know it.
Never going to know it. Yeah. And we'll, you know, like we could take like, you know, Biden and Trump's face and make a whole new person.
Oh, please don't. Or do. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, we've done it already. We did that.
That's funny, man.
It's probably floating out there somewhere. Nah, I think it's just internal. We haven't published it. But I've seen the Biden-Trump clash and it's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Biden and Trump, then what do you make of this? This last year,
real quick, let me just announce that Bloom AI has launched the deepfake podcast to educate people.
Okay,
And we wanted, like I said, we want to do this stuff in an educated way. So, deepfake podcast is a way for us to talk about deepfakes and provide education around it, so on and so forth. And then we also have the founder, CEO Arlo. Arlo talks about calling it synthetic media as opposed to deepfakes, because there's a lot of negative feedback that comes to the term deepfake.
We better get used to it because it's coming. I mean, I've seen the, you know, I think a lot of us have seen the where they put it side by side, one person talking, the next person's Vladimir Putin, and this person's saying things and Putin's saying the words. It looks exactly like. I mean, we're in a situation where we may have already been deep faked. Yeah,
absolutely. No. And we've provided enough content to make that happen. There's enough. If you got a podcast, they can deep fake your voice.
I heard the Rogan voice. I heard it when they did the Rogan thing to him.
Yeah. You know, if you have music, like they had the Travis bot. They did a Jay-Z song, and Jay-Z's attorney got that removed from the internet really fast.
I bet it did.
But yeah, and in your face, of course, if you're streaming, Oh yeah, we got enough content. If you're YouTube, we got enough content to put your face almost anywhere.
Oh great. I can't wait to see what I'm doing next. I'm gonna be saying some crazy shit. Hey, listen, if I get canceled by like the media for saying some insane stuff, just know that it's Hotep fucking with me.
Bloom AI did it.
Exactly. Yeah. I've been cast in a new commercial through Bloom AI models that I didn't know about. Yeah, but speaking of that and riling people up and using deepfakes to create scenarios that may or may not be true. I mean, we just lived through the last year, which was obviously the weirdest year that most of us have ever lived through. And we saw these sparks along the way, Corona situation, George Floyd and rioting and things like that. It seemed like, and I am a huge hater of the mainstream corporate media, not a fan, don't like them. I see them as very divisive and dangerous to us. But I'm curious, and I don't expect you to be the spokesperson for the Black community, but I would like to get your take on what you saw with the riots and the situation that broke out in the middle of 2020. It seemed like it was being fueled. It didn't seem organic to me. I mean, anger organic, yes, but the reaction seemed oversized and it seemed
astroturfed.
Astroturfed, exactly. What was your take on that? Who was doing it? What were they trying to do by getting everybody riled up?
Let me dive into my notes here. I know it's here somewhere.
Okay.
I was going to go off of memory. If I can't find it in 2 seconds, then I won't.
Yeah.
I can't find it in 2 seconds. All right. Here's off of memory.
The Bolshevik Revolution was financed by Wall Street.
You have Fabian Society, Fabian Socialists, also financed the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia for the seizure of assets. You have certain targets during the World War. I believe it was World War One or Two. I can't remember. I want to say both, but certain. No, it was two. Certain targets were sidestepped and avoided because of the financing from Wall Street. You have IG Farben, was a chemical company that was financed by Wall Street. You can see Esso gas tanks in Germany, so on and so forth. Astroturfing of movements is nothing new, is my point. And Black Lives Matter is no different. This is an astroturf movement. I was one of the first people to call it out.
Thank you for doing that, because I had a lot of people say to me, do you support Black Lives Matter? I said, well, what do you mean by that? Do you mean Black Lives Matter, registered trademark, copyright, patent pending, corporation Black Lives Matter? Because no, I don't support that bullshit at all. Do I support the Black community? Fuck. I mean, do you have to ask? Of course I support the Black community, but that those are not the same thing to me.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm going to read something to you. If we go to BLM chapter statement, .com. It'll show you the difference between the big organization and the chapters. So there's several chapters across the United States. You got Philly, Indianapolis, DC, Chicago, OKC, New Jersey, San Diego, Vancouver, and then Hudson Valley and another one. And here they have basically 6 points. I'm going to find a good part. Believe that the events occurred in the manner we became chapters. Since the establishment of the BLMGN, this is the Black Lives Matter Global Network. This is the mothership. Our chapters have consistently raised concerns about financial transparency, decision-making, and accountability. Despite years of effort No acceptable internal process of accountability has ever been produced by BLMGN, Black Lives Matter Global Network, and these recent events have undermined the efforts of chapters seeking to democratize its processes and its resources.
Mm.
So you don't need to be a white supremacist, a Trump supporter, alt-right, or any of these things to understand that there's something fishy happening with the Black Lives Matter Global Network, because you have right here their very own chapters calling them out. It says it is time for accountability. Statement from the front lines of BLM. Hmm. Black Lives Matter, BLM chapter statement.com to reiterate. Wow. And they created this website. Now, again, I was calling this stuff out since 2014. I made the YouTube video in 2015 and I told people, this ain't us. This ain't the Black community. I know what a Black power movement looked like. And a Black power movement don't get the backing of the white liberal.
No.
So I knew this was AstroTurf. Now, another thing we got to look at is when Black Lives Matter first popped on the scene, the media was not favorable towards them. It was the usual rhetoric, violent thugs, so on and so forth. But when Trump ran, they changed their tune. It became mostly peaceful protesters. Now, we had a brother by the name of Darren Seals. So the genesis of Black Lives Matter goes back to Ferguson. This is Mike Brown, mm-hmm. was murdered by the police. Now, whether he was guilty or not is irrelevant to the story. Darren Seals said that when they were protesting, there were insurgents, agents of the Caucasian variety that would come in and toss things at the police. And when things got violent, they would leave. I did a recent interview with Black Mountain Hotep, who can attest to the same thing happened with him recently, within the past 365 days. Point of the matter is, I'm talking about Antifa, Black Bloc. So what you'll have is you'll have Black Lives Matter, who will be quote unquote front lines. And then you'll have Antifa, which will embed themselves within the movement and create violence.
Mm-hmm.
They're part of the AstroTurfing as well. They're financed and organized. The other thing I know about organization is organization's an impossible task. I should say improbable, but it feels impossible at the emotional level. I know because I organize. Right. Hotep Nation. It's really hard to get a bunch of people out to do anything.
Yes.
Black Lives Matter were out in the streets globally.
Yeah.
So I said to myself, as a marketer, how would I organize this thing globally to happen all on the same day? And I'm going to remove media from this. So I said, probably start with a good email list.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wouldn't cultivate my own email list. I would get the help of other people. So we'd reach out to the feminist organizations, the LGBT organizations, the green groups, all these different activist groups. And we'd say, look, we're all organizing. And the thing is, each one of these email lists has a segment that's activated and ready to go at the drop of a dime. You know, it might be 10, 20 people that could show up. So that stuff starts to add up. But one email blast, you got 100 people in this city, 100 people in that city, 100 people in this city. And then next thing you know, it's a global movement. So I said, oh, this is some AstroTurf coerced thing. And then, of course, you know, got the whole George Soros Open Society. They don't hide that. It's right on the website that he funds Black Lives Matter. This is no secret or conspiracy theory. And we can go look into his past and, you know, Nazi Germany and his past and manipulate markets. That's no secret either. But again, I don't support Black Lives Matter, the corporation. I've never supported Black Lives Matter, the corporation. It's always been a ruse from the very start. I do support the message somewhat, right? Like, yeah, Black Lives Matter. I would never say that. It's just a feminine thing to say, you know? But yeah, it's,
we shouldn't need to say it. It should be, you know, to say Black Lives Matter is to imply that at one point they didn't matter. I mean, I guess in this country they didn't. I mean, they're in the history, but to say it now, it feels so like
feminine.
It feels like, oh, are there any black people around? Black Lives Matter, you know, like white people looking around trying to like, you know, not get, you know, show their support. Look, I don't know. I never thought you needed to. I mean, I thought if you wanted to show support to the black community, there's plenty of other ways to do it too. But it just seemed very artificial to me. It just seemed very forced. And once I saw, you know, once you've got, as you mentioned, Soros being involved. I know Soros has backed many revolutions, color revolutions, purple revolution, the rose revolution. When I saw this, I said, oh, this is another color revolution. It's the black revolution. You know, that's Soros's gig. He's a destabilization agent. He comes in to divide people up and fracture these groups and create chaos. And that's good. That's good for some things. It's good for the government. It's good for them because through these chaos and chaotic times, the government can come in with an overreaction and start enacting things that they would never think of doing before. But now all of a sudden, hey, listen, we've got riots going on. We have to put this stuff down. So I was very suspicious when I, as soon as I saw George Soros, then of course you've got the Acme bricks, the big stacks of bricks showing up on the corners. And I'm going, man, last time I saw Acme bricks, it was the Roadrunner dropping them on the coyote, you know? So like, shit, do we have that going on now too? We got Looney Tunes involved. I mean, the whole thing just seemed fake. And on top of all of that, what I started to notice, and you tell me if I'm out of my mind on this, but it struck me that the BLM, the global one you're talking about, then started approaching major corporations and organizations, NBA, you know, Nike, whoever, all these big groups, and started saying, would you like to support our organization? Mm-hmm. And it was almost like a shakedown. It felt like nice flower shop you have here. It'd be a shame if something bad happened to it. Mm-hmm. Would you like to support us? So then I started to get this feeling that it was just a real, it just seemed like a shakedown, like you're paying insurance. I'm going to ensure that my business remains by giving BLM some money so that when people come and say, well, let me see your papers, please. You go, I gave money to BLM. They go, okay, you're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same thing with social media. You know, if you didn't post a black box, it was like, oh, you could be canceled.
Yep.
So you had people posting that black box on their page just because they didn't want to be seen as racist.
Yeah.
And I had a friend who had a store who, you know, he's focusing on like, you know, finance and his store. He's not on social media. So the whole thing happened and people were in his comments. He checks his Facebook because he posts, you know, he's just posting on Facebook about his coffee. And people are like, oh, my God, you must be racist. You didn't post a black box. He's like, wait, what are you guys talking about? Like, somebody catch me up here. What is this black box? You don't think Black Lives Matter? And he's like mad confused. So he called me up. He's like, bro, what's going on? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
What's happening?
He's
canceled.
He's like, yo, all these people on my Facebook yelling at me. You know, like, I'm not on social media. School me. So I'm like, yo, if you don't post that black box, they're going to think you racist, dog. Oh, man. He's like, yo, but I'm not even paying attention. And that's the thing. It's like, they're not even allowing you to be in a space where you can ignore some of the BS happening online and just stay focused on your business. And because that's really what's going to make this world better is minding your business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And we've got this new president in the White House now who comes in, you know, it was crazy to me that you're going to run Joe Biden and Kamala Harris 1 and 2 here. And during the summer of 2020, when you've got these riots going on, you've got Black Lives Matter and everything. And these two buffoons have done more to destroy the black community than any of those cops ever have. I mean, Joe Biden wrote the fucking omnibus crime bill with Bill Clinton and then put a disproportionate percentage of the black community in prison on long prison stretches for rock cocaine, which is known as a black drug, as opposed to powdered cocaine. And you're going to run on a platform where you're going to, you know, help the black community? Get the fuck out of here. Are people just not paying attention to this? Am I the only one mad about this? I can't possibly be.
Biden said, black people don't know how to use the internet.
Yes.
He said, poor kids aren't as smart as
white kids.
Right. White kids. Like, I mean, if you're not black, if you don't vote for me, I don't want my kids going to a interracial jungle, integrated with a racial jungle. I mean, his list of racial epithets is just long. And it's sad. It's sad that. Now, here's the thing. When we say black community in regards to this issue, obviously the Hoteps are hip to it, right? There's a large, here's the big problem. There is a conservative section of the black community. Now, I'm not talking about black conservatives. I'm talking about conservative as the adjective, because the black conservatives are just fucking sellouts for the Republican Party. Right. Not all of them, most of them.
But some.
There's a conservative section of the black community, which is blackballed from media, which means it gives off the perception that black people are wholly in bed with the Democratic Party, because the only people they put in the media are those who are in bed with the liberal, socialist, democratic agenda.
Right.
So when you look at your TV, you only see one type of black person. The Hotep Jesus is a world you won't see on your TV. They hide us. Right?
Yeah.
Now, the impact of that is the fact that black people who aren't involved in any of this stuff only see themselves on the screen with one type of ideology.
Yeah.
And they in turn start believing the brainwashing, because they say, well, this person's from Harvard. This one graduated from this college in HBCU, and they married this person. This is Oprah, and these are some of our idols, right? So when you hear your idols say, hey, you know, I just took the needle, mm-hmm. or I just voted for Biden, you have no choice but to subconsciously think that's the correct thing to do, mm-hmm. without investigating. Now, when people start presenting the facts, you see a lot of people go, wait, how come I never saw this before? Like the hoax of the very fine people of Donald Trump. For example, let's look at the impeachment, the failed impeachment.
Yes.
They dropped that. They acquitted him the next day. Like, you know what? Let's just end this right now. Because his attorney was like, oh, you think he's dangerous? Let me show you these clips. And he started running clips from who's the black lady out in California, look like James Brown.
Oh, Maxine Waters.
You got Maxine Waters calling for blatant violence.
Fuck, she does look like James Brown, by the way. I just just realized that. Holy shit. She's even got the hair.
So they were literally calling for violence.
Yeah. When you see them, harass them, make them. Yeah. All of that.
Yeah. Stuff. Make them uncomfortable.
Tape of 10 hours long of all that stuff.
And then they got caught clipping Trump's speech on the 6th.
Yep.
And then he played the whole clip where it said, you know, don't be violent. And then he ran down the timeline and showed that before he even started speaking, they had infiltrated the Capitol. So there's no way he could have incited the insurrection.
Yeah.
Then what happened later was Trump actually called for the National Guard, I think to the tune of 6,000 or 10,000 troops to be called to the Capitol. And Nancy Pelosi said no.
No. Yep.
For his own rally, he said, we're going to need protection. And Nancy Pelosi vetoed it. So when it came down to his, I think his attorney did a great job. And you had to acquit the man, because if you didn't acquit him and you want to keep that trial going, you was going to incriminate yourself, because MSNBC, CNN, they were playing the hearing live. Mm-hmm. And some of those clips was getting out to the public, and they like the public started like, oh wait,
yeah,
maybe Trump isn't innocent. You got people start, so they say, all right, we got to stop this impeachment now. 0-2.
Yeah, let's wrap up with this. Give me the lowdown on Hotep Nation. Now the term Hotep translates into at peace or satisfied. Is that
satisfaction to be at rest? Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys are about self-empowerment. Did you know where you guys would have been useful? I was at USC in 1992 when the Rodney King riots hit, right? I watched the, you know, the shit burn, and it was crazy. And after that, I remember thinking, well, the good, I'm sad that there was a riots and all this stuff, but the good thing is this will never happen again. Right. Mm. But it has happened again. And I watched leaders like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton march the Black community. And now here we are 30 years later, and they're still marching the Black community. I felt like they marched them in a circle for the last three decades.
Yeah.
And then I come to find out what you guys are doing. And I'm saying, hang on a second here. This looks like a much better form of, this looks like a much better group of leadership than what I've been seeing of the Rainbow Coalition and all that nonsense. This seems like a much better group. Talk to me about who is making up your group, what you guys are about, and what you stand for.
Yeah. So it's a strong group of Black men. Uncle Hotep, Dole Dubs, his president, myself, MG, Michael Green, Mukhtar, Jordan Haywood, and Lauren is probably the one female in our executive team. But then we got a whole bunch of people like Hotep with it, Cannon Hotep that made content. A lot of people, you know, but it's really much about making a joke of the world and not a complaint or a tragedy of it. It's a complete joke, right? Like fiat currency is just a complete joke. You have to laugh at it, right? So we play that angle. I think what it is, you know, we came up from Black Panther Party, Marcus Garvey, 5% of the Nubians, the Hebrew Israelites, Bloods, the Crips, the Vice Lords, John Henry Clark, Dr. Cress Welsin, you know, Harlem, 125th Street, all of this like Black consciousness. And as one of the leaders in the movement, I quickly detected the problems with some of the previous movements. And one of them was the fact that a lot of our leaders die broke. We call them poor righteous teachers. And I said, that's one thing we got to fix. It's like, it's almost as if we'd rather be on the soapbox on the corner preaching this truth of righteousness, but you're broke.
Yeah.
You can't help nobody like that. So the one tenet we had was like, we got to master this system of economics and finance. So we teach finance, stock market, crypto, whole nine. And as you can see, I'm practically like a Bitcoin bank. So that's that aspect. The other thing I didn't like, or I wanted to separate myself from, was the hate whitey aspect. Mm-hmm. I had that in me since like 1996. I was just like, I mean, I had white friends here and there, you know, but I was racist. I got to be honest. But I was trained up like that. Like I was listening to the Farrakhan tapes and the, you know, and all of that stuff, man. And I just like really detested it. But when I had my spiritual awakening, it just had me like, you know, like we are all one. And I'm just like, I can't operate like this, because what I found was I was going out in public seeing white people and my blood pressure was going up. I was going out in public and I'm looking at white people like, yo, they the enemy, you know? And I felt myself just being agitated all the time. And I'm like, this can't be good for my physical body. It can't be good for me at all. So when I released that tension, I felt lighter. I felt smarter. I felt better. I felt flexible and agile. So I released that hate. And I said, I want to have a movement that is by and for Black people that includes white people. Who's done that before? You know,
nobody, I don't think. Not on a scale like this. Not one that's backed by
the people.
The people, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Not these fake ones that they want you to think or but an actual one.
An actual one, yeah. So, you know, that was my thing, was like, how can we work with white people to make this world better? How can we put down that hate? So I would, you know, like I said, I'm a social engineer. So I would do funny stuff. Like I came up with the acronym MAW, middle-aged white woman. And I put on this character of like being in love with middle-aged white women. Right. Mm-hmm. So like, so that's, and I really have like a strong following of middle-aged white women. Like, oh, we love Hotep Jesus. Right. Like,
yeah.
You know, And then, you know, just like a whole bunch of different things we've done over the years to just say, like, look, I don't got no problem with white people, you know, and then doing the history behind it all and knowing how racism was astroturfed and created mostly out of scarcity and some of it from the Knights of the Golden Circle and the Ku Klux Klan being the military arm of that organization, you know. So like and then understanding how abolitionists were having propaganda written against slavery and really embellishing that and hyperbole in there just to push their agenda. And slavery wasn't as bad as he said it was. I mean, the idea of slavery obviously is some derelict shit, but yeah, it wasn't like what they said it was. And then when you start looking at some of the literature, you know, you have, you know, some black folks that lead the South and come up North and they like writing songs like, damn, I miss the South. Damn, I miss the Dixie. You know, like all this, like, and it's just like, damn, like if the South was that bad, why is this black person saying, I wish I was there? And it's just like, maybe because life was better down there. Yeah. You even had some slaves saying life was better on the plantation than it was being free. And it makes sense because you got somebody taking care of you, you know, and if those ass whoopings was that bad, you'd probably want to be free. But the truth of the matter is, you know, when you do the research, like, Thaddeus Russell had, I think they averaged like 2.1 whippings a year or 1.9 or something like that. Mm. But then it's just like people, like black people think we had a monopoly on getting whipped. And it's just like, no, corporal punishment was part of the culture back then. You would have, what's it called? A tip, starts with a T when you put your head inside the thing.
Oh, so, yeah, I know what you're talking about. It's a rack, like the rack that where they put your arms and head through and make you stand out there all day long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It was part of the culture. Corporal punishment was part of the culture. You know, even it wasn't uncommon for you to take your child and strap him to a tree and whip him.
Yeah.
You know, like that was the pillory. That's what it's called. The pillory.
Pillory.
Yeah. The pillory is what it's called. P-I-L-L-O-R-Y. I said T is P. But you know, you had like the pillory, like that was like, that's just how culture was back then. Like you was white and you committed a crime. You got whipped. You got your ass beat. You was a kid and you didn't do what you were supposed to do in school. You got whipped. So, you know, people, when you tell history in parts and not the whole, black people start to think they had a monopoly on getting whipped. No, we didn't have a monopoly on getting whipped. Everybody got their ass whooped. Did we deserve some of the whippings? I don't think so. But we don't have a monopoly. We didn't have a monopoly on hangings.
Yeah.
That was part of capital punishment. Like, you know, so. You know, so the other aspect of Hotep is history, like providing people with real history, right? And I focus mostly on European and U.S. history. Doe Dukes focuses on black history, and he's got an account called Damned History, and he be dropping some crazy facts about, you know, black history and more of the empowering things, like look at this young girl who was a millionaire, like Sarah Rector. Or look at this guy who during like Jim Crow became a billionaire, like all these different like stories that they'll never put on TV. They'll never put on Netflix. Right. But they'll show you like this slave mentality. So it's like instead of telling people they're a victim, we show the stories of victory and show people like here's the empowering thing about black people. And we stand in our power. We don't stand in our victimhood and say like, oh, Trump this, Trump that, like, I'm not really worried about what Trump's saying in the office, you know, he's not going to have no direct effect on me. And, oh, he said some mean things. It's like, yo, where are you at? Where are we right now? You know, that we're, and especially the black community saying we don't like how somebody talks. Do you know how we talk in the black community? I mean, we are the epitome of profanity and dissing. Like dissing is part of our culture. We got a whole hip hop section and history of dissing people.
Yeah.
So then when we say like, oh, the president says something rude, I'm like, bro, we talk to each other rude. That's he's expressing our culture. So how are we acting like victims when we do the same things? It's like, we're no exemplary examples of, you know, the Victorian age and Puritanism. Like, what is wrong with you? You know, so we spend a lot of time just acting like men and not like bitches.
That should be your motto. Acting like men and not a bunch of bitches. You know what I like? I like that the things that you're into, we're in a society right now that is trying to convince us all to not think, to just sit on the side and outsource your critical thinking to somebody else, to the media, to politicians, to somebody else. But what you are doing, what your group is doing, what you're doing through your work is you are challenging people to actually think about that. And I think that is fantastic. If people want to catch up and connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Go to my website, briansharp.co. That's my legal slave name, BRYANSHARPE. That's Brian with a Y, Sharp with a E.co. All my links are there. My books are there. Dominate Twitter, Unbreakable Rules of Masculinity. My new book will be up there. All of my companies are up there. Coinbase, Wazo, Bloom, Hotep Nation, and my Saturday class. Yeah, it's all there.
I appreciate you coming on the show. And people, if you like this show, you're going to have to do one thing. Share it. We give you the show for free. Share it. The algorithms aren't gonna do anything. They see Hotep Jesus in that title. They're gonna downvote the shit out of that. So thanks everybody. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.